Good morning and welcome to our podcast. My name is David Pritchard and I'm the head of marketing here at Sintons. I'm joined today by my colleague Leah Greenwell, who is a member of the employment team here at Sintons. So the employment team have been releasing a regular employment law bulletin for the past few years. Very well read, very informative. We are now actually on issue 76. All the back issues are available on our website to read, should you wish, www.sintons.co.uk. But issue 76 is the first of the series that we're going to record as a podcast. And Leah is going to run through this with you now. It'll take approximately 15 minutes. Leah, good morning and over to you.
Thanks, David, and hi, everyone. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the first podcast recording of our Employment Monthly Bulletin. Every month, the employment team at Sintons publish a bulletin and it covers key areas of law or recent tribunal cases and the implications that these decisions have on both employees and employers. As David says, our bulletins can be found on our Twitter and LinkedIn platforms, so please do follow us for regular employment law updates. This month, we have picked out three tribunal cases, so I hope to give you a little overview of these decisions and what they mean from an employment law perspective. So the first of our tribunal matters is the case of Cartoon and Wynn Solicitors, where it was held that a solicitor was unfairly dismissed for refusing to agree changes to their employment contract during the COVID-19 pandemic. So just some background about the case, first of all. The respondent, Wynn Solicitors, had placed approximately half of its staff on furlough leave in response to the pandemic. The claimant, Ms. Carton, was one of the solicitors selected to continue working. However, she was told that all employees would need to agree to variations to their contracts, which were non-negotiable, or they would face likely dismissal. The variation gave the respondent the freedom to place an employee on furlough or to unilaterally reduce their hours and pay by up to 20% on just 5 days' notice. Ms. Carton refused to agree to the contract variation as she was continuing to perform the job she had been contracted to do. She did, however, explain that if she were to be furloughed or any other expected situation were to arise, then she would consider the contract variation at that point. However, a head of department reiterated the firm's position that the changes were non-negotiable and that she would be dismissed if she did not agree. The respondent's chief operating officer eventually instructed HR to terminate Ms. Carton's employment. The employment tribunal found that the respondent had sound, good business reasons for implementing the contractual variation and that given the effects of the pandemic, it was reasonable to want to implement the measures it did. However, the tribunal found that there had been no meaningful consultation between the parties and that the respondent had not reasonably explored alternatives to dismissal. Therefore, the dismissal was unfair. This decision is really important for employers and it acts as a reminder that even where there are sound business reasons, a dismissal for failure to agree to new terms will almost always be unfair where an employer has not followed a procedure of any kind or consulted with employees over a proposed change and considered any reasonable alternatives to dismissal, even where the business is faced with urgent financial pressures. Our next case provides some clarity around calculating national minimum wage for sleeping workers following the Supreme Court's decision in Royal Mencap Society against Tomlinson Blake and others. Following this case, the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy updated its guidance on calculating the national minimum wage for sleeping workers. This has actually been a really topical case, given the pandemic and the importance of our healthcare workers that we've seen and experienced, particularly over the last 18 months. The decision in Royal Mencap held that workers on sleeping shifts are only entitled to the national minimum wage when they are awake for the purposes of working, but not when they are permitted to sleep. Nevertheless, the guidance provided by the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy explains that the position is different for workers who are expected to perform activities for all or most of a shift and are only permitted to sleep between tasks where possible, such as napping when not busy. In such cases, it is likely that the national minimum wage must be paid for whole of the shift, including for any time spent asleep, on the basis that the worker is in effect working all of that time. The guidance also confirms that the national minimum wage will be payable for time spent asleep if the employer does not provide workers with suitable sleeping facilities. The guidance on the types of work and the working hours for which you must pay the national minimum wage can be found on the government website if you wish to review it in full. The guidance is actually really quite useful and provides a summary and examples of different types of work and the relevant rules. So our final tribunal matter to discuss today is the highly publicised case of Mayor Forstady and Centre for Global Development, where the Employment Appeal Tribunal held that gender-critical beliefs, including a belief that biological sex is real, immutable, and not to be conflated with gender identity, is a philosophical belief protected under the Equality Act. This case has drawn much attention from the media, so if you're looking for some interesting debate, then do check out the commentary on Twitter. But for now, I'm going to give you a bit of an overview of the case and what the tribunal found. The claimant, Ms. Forstady, posted a series of tweets questioning the proposed reforms to the Gender Recognition Act 2004, which would enable people to self-identify and legally transition from the gender assigned to them at birth without a medical diagnosis. One of her beliefs was that trans women holding certificates that recognise their transgender identity cannot describe themselves as women. The company engaging her as a consultant at the time, Centre for Global Development, received complaints that some of her tweets were transphobic and her contract was subsequently not renewed. Ms. Forstady complained of direct discrimination on grounds of belief. In the first instance, the Employment Tribunal found that Ms. Forstady's view in its absolutist nature was incompatible with human dignity and fundamental rights of others, and she was not entitled to ignore the rights of a transgender person and the enormous pain that can be caused by misgendering. However, during the appeal, it was held that the Employment Tribunal had erred in law and it had considered the validity of the claimant's beliefs rather than determining whether the belief was protected under the Equality Act. The Employment Appeal Tribunal held that Ms. Forstady's belief satisfied the criteria test for what will amount to a philosophical belief as set out in the case of Granger and Nicholson. It was held that a philosophical belief would only be excluded for failing to satisfy the Granger test if it was the kind of belief which was akin to Nazism or totalitarianism and therefore justifiably restricted under Articles 9, Freedom of Thought, Conscience and Religion, and 10, Freedom of Expression of the European Convention on Human Rights. It stated that beliefs that are offensive, shocking, or even disturbing to others and which fall into the less grave forms of hate speech would not be excluded from protection under the Equality Act. This is a really clear decision and establishes that gender-critical beliefs can be protected under the Equality Act and highlights the value of free speech. However, what is really important to note is that it is not justification for harassment and discrimination against trans persons. In its judgment, the Employment Appeal Tribunal specifically emphasised that it was not expressing a view on the merits of either side of the transgender debate, and its decision does not mean that those with gender-critical beliefs can misgender trans persons with impunity, and it does not mean that employers will not be able to provide a safe environment for trans persons. Crucially, the decision does not impact the protection trans persons have under the Equality Act, as with any other protected characteristic. As the Employment Appeal Tribunal noted, the manner in which an employee manifests their gender-critical beliefs in the course of their employment could amount to discrimination or harassment under the Equality Act, which employers would then be liable for. What will be difficult for employers is managing conflicting beliefs within the workforce, where both are protected. Employers would be well advised to review their equal opportunities and anti-harassment policies and appropriate training in this area. We do not think this is the last we will hear on this case, as it is remitted back to the Employment Tribunal to proceed, so watch this space. That's all from me today, so thank you for listening, and I hope you join us again in our next Employment Bulletin podcast. And I'll now pass you back to David.
Thanks, Leah. Very interesting, very useful. Very quickly for me, we release webinars, podcasts and blogs on a regular basis. all of which can be found on our website at www.sintons.co.uk. And this includes our monthly Q&A sessions that we run at the end of each month with the employment team, and also videos of our larger employment law seminars, all of which, again, are on the website, www.sintons.co.uk. If you'd like to discuss anything Leah has raised today further, please don't hesitate to get in touch with her or a member of the team. Leah can be contacted via telephone 0191 226 7878 or via email leah.greenwell@sintons.co.uk. So this was issue 76. We will bring you issue 77 in due course. Thank you very much for listening. We do appreciate it. We say it every time, but we don't take the amount of people that tune into the podcasts, sending questions, for granted. We do generally appreciate it. And stay safe, everyone. Thanks for your time.